Hello and welcome to another fantastic episode of the Fantastic Mr. Podcast. Today is another Movies by the Decade, and this time we are exploring the 1970s. Yay! We get to talk about hippies and whatnot. So strap in and sit back, I don't know, whichever order you want to do that in, and let's go to a galaxy far, far away and talk about the 70s. There's some interesting movies that came out.
Oh, about the political, cultural, and environmental upheaval that happened in the 70s. The Western world was increasing in political awareness, economic liberty for women. Over in China, they've got the death of Mao Zedong. I don't think I pronounced that right. But the market liberalization, and then you had the hippies, decrying war.
There was a war going on, yeah.
And lots of sexual liberation, lots of drugs.
Is that the time when women stopped wearing bras?
What?
Is that whenever women stopped wearing bras?
I don't know if you would be able to pinpoint an exact
time.
I don't know if you'd be able to
pinpoint
an exact movement of it, but I would say that's a lot. Lots of topless women in
not really topless
at Woodstock.
They still wore shirts. I'm just saying they didn't wear bras.
I'm saying they also went topless.
Oh well, yeah, Woodstock, totally at Woodstock. There was Free the Nipple. Oh, that was Free the Nipple was a campaign in 2012. I'm thinking of, but I know that the 70s there was like a whole thing where women didn't wear bras. Or not maybe not the 70s, but
a rejection of the self-presentation of having to use makeup and deodorant and shaving, things like that. Returning to our naturalistic roots.
Brave and Braless. It was a feminist thing. How feminism hit the 70s, I guess. Why should men be allowed?
The only things going on in the 70s, in on the Hollywood side, we started to have a lot of French art piece films.
You don't want to talk about
noirs started to become a big hit, as well as a lot of sci-fi and culturally significant films that we still watch today.
So you're done talking about the nipples and stuff? I'm just kidding. We could talk about.
I mean, it's always fun to talk about nipples, but we are a movie podcast. Unless you just really want to go in.
No, it's fine. We could talk about whatever you want to talk about, Jake.
Wasn't there a popularity of movie theaters specifically meant for dirty films? Or was that a different era? I feel like there was a increasing popularity when it came to the adult film industry. Seems like a lot of foreign films, like even to this day, like French especially, have a lot more freedom. Like they don't have a problem showing full frontal nudity, and it's not like a thing to intentionally like shock you or anything. It's just there casually.
I think the
French have a certain freedom when it comes to that type of
je ne sais quoi.
I am looking at this adult movie theater. Let's see, 1960 existed about 20 theaters. Late 60s, early 70s, they spread to the rest of the country. And that's where Pee Wee Herman had his big scandal. Not Pee Wee Herman, but Paul Rubens, I don't know when that was, but it was after 1970, that's for sure. Let's see, small storefront is in quotes, theaters with only a dozen seats sprang up. And by 1970, 750 pornographic theaters existed in the U.S., that's a lot.
Probably not less than a handful today, I'm sure.
I'm sure. But not in the United States.
Yeah.
Over there somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Sorry to dive into that.
That's okay.
Segue. Just something about the 70s reminds me of the porn industry exploding for some reason.
Well, it's even have you seen, oh my God, what is that movie called? Boogie Nights. It takes place in the 70s with Mark Wahlberg and what's that guy's name? A really good actor, died not too long ago. My goodness, he was in The Master. He's in a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson movies. God dang it. I have to look him up because I forget his name. He's got three names. Anybody? Yeah, I'm about to find
out. No idea.
When I say it, you're gonna be mad. Watch. The movie came out in 97, but it's about this guy played by Mark Wahlberg who gets in the porn industry because he's got a big old,
big old ween.
Big old ween. Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's his name.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
No, he was in the movie, though. He was he was in Boogie Nights. He's in a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson's movies. He's a really great actor. He was also in Punch Drunk Love and like The Master and just all these great movies. He's just phenomenal actor. Anyway, that's about the 70s porn industry. It was a very interesting movie. But it was made in the 90s, so we technically didn't have to watch it. Okay, HBO premiered in the 70s. It was founded in 1972, which is like the first premium television channel founded.
That also ties in with the porn subject.
Yeah, because like it started. That's also when like things were able to start getting a little more violent on screen, as far as like movies go. Because like that's also, and we can talk about this later, but the blaxploitation movement happened around that time, and so things started getting a little more in your face with the violence and the nudity and the sex, like the sex and the drugs and all this stuff. It's kind of an interesting time in film history.
How did you gain access to HBO back in the 70s?
You had to pay for it through cable. You just added it to your plan. Like even in the 90s and the 2000s, we had HBO, and I mean we had satellite. Back then it was cable, and it's a premium cable channel back then. But then when you had satellite, you know, you order packages and you get certain channels with the packages, and HBO was one of them. Actually, when we had it, we had like HBO and Stars and Cinemax, which if you remember Cinemax at night, also called Skinemax. But HBO had some interesting shows on it too that were really sexual type shows. And then of course they had just had movies, you know, just uncensored movies, which is great. And actually not too long ago, I think Sesame Street moved to HBO. I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
But it did
change it up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they were trying to do, but maybe they just needed somebody, because it was on PBS, and I don't know, maybe they get more money this way. I don't know.
That government programming fund ran out.
Yeah, and they needed somebody else, and HBO saves the day.
Yeah, Big Bird, you stripped for us a little bit. Pluck those feathers, we'll let you on here.
Gross. What if kids are listening, Jake?
out of all the networks possible, HBO is kind of the odd one to say, yeah, all right, we'll rescue Sesame Street.
We'll take some Muppet on Muppet action.
I don't think stop. That is the Muppets, not Sesame Street, by the way.
Street characters are Muppets.
But yeah, but Kermit is not on Sesame Street.
Kermit's he's had appearances.
No, he hasn't. Has he really?
He has too.
It's crossovers, I believe. Yeah.
It's crossovers.
Oh, that's cool.
It's all the same universe, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same universe.
Yeah.
Same universe. They need to have a they need to do a Muppet universe. Sesame Street and the Muppets, and I don't know what other Muppets are out there. I think that's it.
The Crystal was the Dark Kingdom.
Dark Crystal. Yeah. I'm talking about like show
Hansenverse.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. So there were some huge movies that came out around this time as well.
A lot of huge movies.
Yeah. And so I have a small list right here. The Godfather came out in 72. Wonderful movie. I actually watched that probably right before I moved to Memphis. So I don't know, 2020, 2021 is when I moved about. 2021. Yeah. And so I watched that a few years ago for the first time, and it was great. I haven't seen the other two yet, but it was good. And then The Exorcist came out in 73. Which, if you guys have seen The Exorcist, it just really re-released in theaters for its 50th anniversary, along with a new movie. I don't know if y'all have seen the newest Exorcist movie, but it was good. It was okay. It had some familiar faces in it.
I think you guys mentioned this before, to begin in general. It seemed like the 70s had a lot of set the standard, set the example for future decades of film in many genres. Horror and sci-fi, drama.
I would say
revolutionary time.
Yeah, for horror at least, I think The Exorcist was kind of like the big one, right? Because like they had some horror stuff before, but this is like demonic possession, kind of more realistic. I mean, nowadays you watch The Exorcist, and yeah, it's still a great movie. Like even when I watched it in theaters when it came out again and last year. And like, I still think it's a great movie. It's still like, to me, thinking back, like, man, that must've been really scary for people in 1973. Even my older brother.
I haven't seen Exorcist, to be honest. Does it rely on blood?
No, it just relies on.
Are you scared, or is there not much blood if we're talking about exorcism?
No, it just relies on like scary moments. Like, I mean, there is some blood, there's some gore, like falling down stairs and stuff. But the scariest is like Linda Blair, who plays. Oh my God, I can't remember the kid's name now. I'm about to look it up. Reagan. I think it's Reagan. Things like the spinning head. Don't know if y'all remember seeing that ever in life. Reagan. But you know, her head spins around completely. She has a different voice. She doesn't sound like, even in possession movies now, their voices don't really change as much as Reagan's did in that movie. Like, it sounded like a demon. You know, even like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, they're talking through her, but her voice doesn't change too much. You know, you still hear her voice in there. In this, it's like, yeah, no, we're getting rid of Reagan's voice and we're replacing it with the man voice. And that's what they did.
Like, he's a 40-year-old man.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he sounds like. He's like he sounds like an old man. And
but
like,
it's a demon, right?
Yeah, I mean, not yeah, it's person. A male, it's a male demon. So it's like, seriously, yeah. But yeah, that
are there just, female demons? I don't know.
I'm sure there are. Femens. Right? I'm sure there are, but I don't care to find out. But yeah, and that, I don't know. I think just the overall vibe of The Exorcist really freaked people out. My older brother, who's 50 something now, he's 52 or 53. He still won't watch it to this day because he watched it as a kid. And scared the crap out of him. And I was like, man, I love that movie. He's like, I hate that movie. Ever since I watched it when I was a kid, never watch it again. Because, you know, he was a kid. I mean, he probably didn't watch it when it came out because he was probably like 3 years old. But, you know, maybe 10 years later or 15 years later, he watched it and still was scared. Because, I mean, that was pretty good special effects.
I wonder what, like, his memory of that must be larger than life.
I mean, I guess, if he won't watch it again at all.
Yeah, I can't think of a movie that's done that to me.
Like, when we watched As Above, So Below, it did freak me out in theaters, but I still was able to watch it again. I don't know.
I want to get Jake's opinion on that movie. That's one of the great horror flicks of the past decade or so.
As Above, So Below. Has he seen it? Have we talked to him about that? He's not here right now. He walked away. So now we're talking about him because he's not here. Okay. Well, we can talk about a movie that came out in 1975 that I have not seen. Jaws. But
you have not seen Jaws.
I haven't seen it. I would like to see it. I just haven't. Like, every time I sit down to watch a movie, I've already picked the movie. I'm not like, I want to watch Jaws. So one day I'll watch it. Have you seen it?
So this movie, yeah, long, long time ago. Probably it was on TV or like a VHS. But this looks like I'm reading about Jaws. It came out in 1975, and it was like 4 years after his first, Steven Spielberg's first theatrical release called The Duel.
Yeah.
71. So I think Jaws probably catapulted him to...
Oh, yeah.
Mainstream audiences.
Well, not only that, but
in terms of,
yeah, just this, the scope. No, you go ahead, it's fine.
Just in terms of the aesthetic and just a different style of horror that we haven't seen when it comes to just camera angles and
it's a freaking shark,
creating this intensity and utilizing like string instruments, thanks to John Williams, to create one of the most memorable themes.
Yeah, you're man all crush.
John Williams. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He's like 90 something, a little bit too old. But
nah, the age is just a number, my friend. But
he's, I think John Williams and Spielberg, they worked together for several movies. I think they also, I think Close Encounters, not for sure, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that was in 77. That was the Alien
1977
movie, Mashed Potato Mountain. That's a great one.
I haven't seen that one.
That's
either.
An excellent one.
I guess I should watch some of Spielberg's movies, huh?
Well, I think the most recent Spielberg movie that you and I saw was that one about
the Fablemans,
the kind of the coming of age film. Yeah, the Fablemans.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That's pretty good.
What'd you think about that?
I liked it. I enjoyed the filmmaking aspect of it. The kid who wants to be a filmmaker is probably based on a little bit on Steven Spielberg, you know. So, And it was cool. I mean, I need to watch it again. It's been a minute since I've seen it, but
yeah, it had classic scenes from like his E.T. film. I feel like certain camera angles, like when the kids are on the bike, like certain shots looks like what he's done in the past.
Quickly about Jaws, we're going back to Jaws again. Jaws is actually the first movie that kind of started the whole blockbuster trend, where you know they schedule a movie's release date either in the summer or around Christmas time. That's because usually students are out of school around that time, and so they can pay to go see these movies, or they can go pay to see them more often, I guess. And I don't know, just a big budget movie that made, you know, a lot of money and catapulted the movie industry into a different, I don't know, playing field, if you will. Like, yeah, it's always been this one way, but then they're like, let's make Jaws and let's use a lot of money and hope for the best. And they did, and it worked out for them. So that was kind of like the first blockbuster was Jaws. And then, of course, in 1977 became the big one. Star Wars.
George Lucas, he never intended it to be a blockbuster. It was just more of an experimental film, as I understand.
I think American Graffiti had come out before that, and I guess it did okay, but then he had trouble trying to find somebody to make Star Wars, because it just sounded so ridiculous. Even like what's-his-face Alec Guinness, who didn't want to be in the movie, thought it sounded ridiculous, you know? I think even Harrison Ford even thought it was kind of ridiculous, didn't he?
Harrison Ford wasn't even, I don't think he was even originally cast. He was just brought in to read lines.
And then he got cast as Han Solo, as one of the most iconic characters in movie history. Funny how that works. I'm not even here to be cast in the movie. I don't want to be in this movie. Oh wait, I'm going to be in this movie.
I think he was already cast for Indiana Jones, and so Lucasfilm was like, we're not even going to consider him because we don't want him to be, you know, we don't want him to be the leading man in two of our different franchises. And so he just came in to read lines while he was on set between, you know, doing work for Indiana Jones, and it was just a perfect fit. They're like, well, god dang it, now we have to.
Yeah, now we have to. And then, of course, I think when it first came out, it wasn't called Episode 4. It was just Star Wars. But then it made so much money that George Lucas is like, well, if I'm going to make sequels. So I never understood the episode thing. I remember, I really wasn't a big Star Wars person when I was a teenager. But I do remember when Episodes 1, 2, and 3 came out. And I was like, episode? Like, I don't get it. Like, why is it called Episode 1 and Episode 2 and Episode 3? Like, is it a movie? I'm so confused. And, like, even now, I mentioned episode one. I said episode. I was talking to a friend. I said episode one. Or no. I was rewatching Star Wars, and I said I watched episode one recently, and someone said episode one of what? And I was like, oh yeah, episode one, Star Wars episode one. And they're like, oh. I was like, yeah, sorry, I forgot that I have to like be specific, because you know TV is so huge now. It's like you can't just say episode one anymore. Used to, I bet you could. I bet you before TV was a big deal like it is now, you could be like episode one, everybody like, oh yeah, I hate that one. Everybody knows what you're talking about. Anyway,
when it came out, certainly.
But hey, I never, and then he called it, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6, and people are probably also confused because it's like, where's 1, 2, and 3? You know. But then he fixed that.
There's some other ones that came out in the 70s that have been a really big hit or culturally relevant. Like The Omen came out in 1976.
Oh, yeah, they're making a new Omen movie. It's called The First Omen, and it looks really good.
And I was never really a horror guy, so I haven't watched it. But I know that it's always been culturally significant for
They remade it in around the early 2000s with Julia Stiles, and it wasn't that scary. I never saw the original though. Like, but they did. I remember they remade it, and I saw it in theaters, and I was like, "This isn't scary."
And then more on the art house tour side, Suspiria came out. We've talked about that.
Oh, yeah, before. That was a cool movie.
That was a fun movie.
Yeah, I saw that movie.
It's so vivid and so like visually interesting. I didn't feel like the movie itself was very scary.
No.
It was so stylized and like almost joyful in the color.
Yeah.
That you're just like, wow, this is such a treat
never
to
even
watch.
I never even watched the remake. I didn't feel the need to after I saw the first one. I mean, like, the first one isn't like, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, what's special about it, I think, is the cinematography and the color and all that. Like, but it's not like this great, you know, masterpiece of a movie. But it's still like, yeah, like you said, it's fun to. It was fun to watch, and I'd watch it again. Heck, it wasn't scary, but it was cool.
Yeah, like Suspiria definitely. Yeah, like it definitely still suffers from the shaky legs that a lot of cinematographer films earlier had. Like they say all their lines too quickly. They're like very clearly rehearsed. It's very much like, you know, they haven't quite got the pacing down yet.
Yeah.
But it's such a beautiful film that kind of makes up for it. So the 70s for me is very interesting because you have this blend of a lot of films that suffer from that kind of shakiness syndrome, where it's like, you know, there's a lot of cinematographers who haven't figured out the quote-unquote formula as we know it today, where like they hold on shots for too long, they, you know, pause before they give their lines, they say them too quickly or too rehearsed. You know, it's like very clear they're like, they didn't give enough takes or give enough direction for the talent to like give a believable performance. And then at the same time, we have a lot of amazing films that have become so culturally relevant and nailed the formula, quote unquote, on the head. And the 70s was like that weird mix of times where it was this mixed bag between these really unique art house films, sci-fi films, blockbuster films, all kind of commingling together on the scene as everyone really figured out the formula and how to like make film as we are familiar with it today.
I totally agree, though, because like it seems like I saw Maestro in theaters, and it seems like the 70s is like anytime someone goes through somebody's life that when they had lived through like the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and they go through their life, like Maestro went through up to the 60s in black and white, and then as soon as the 70s, like it started showing his life in the 70s, it was in color. So it seems like that's when people are like, you know, this is when color kind of became huge. I don't know.
Or like kind of like when things became modern.
Yeah, I would say the standard at that point. It was just color TV. Although there is a good movie. I know I was going to mention a different movie, but there's a good movie that came out in the 70s. And I feel like I've talked about it before, but it's very possible that I'm a big fat liar. Let me make sure it came out in the 70s before I... Yeah, it came out in 1973, and it's called Paper Moon, and it's it takes place in the 30s, and so it's in black and white, of course, but it came out in 73. But it's a great movie if you guys haven't seen it, and it's just about a con man finds himself saddled with a young girl who may or may not be his daughter. So they're basically going cross country together. But it's we watched it for when I taught high school, and I forget why the heck we watched Paper Moon, but it was in black and white, and it's so funny when high schoolers and people in general, like young people in general, and I hate saying young people, but young people in general, you say it's black and white, and they're like instantly not interested, you know. And high schooler, like when I was taught high school, it was the worst. I'd say it's in black and white. Oh, it's in black, and then they end up loving it. And that was that case with Paper Moon. Is they ended up really liking it because it was a good movie.
Looks good.
Yeah. It was very interesting. If you guys haven't seen it, you should check it out. Okay. And then there's this other movie that I should have made you guys watch before this episode, and I totally forgot about it, but I own it. And it's one of the movies I got from the Criterion Collection, and it's called House. It's about a schoolgirl and six of her classmates travel to her aunt's country home, which turns out to be haunted. And it's very like Suspiria like, but I think it's a little more intense. It's supposed to be a horror movie. Of course, at today's standards, it's kind of silly. So you got to put yourself in that headspace of, you know, this was made in the 70s. This was probably kind of weird. It's still weird and kind of freaky if you guys haven't seen it. It's a Criterion Collection film. And like I forgot who somebody, you know, those videos I send you sometimes of people who go through the Criterion Closet.
Yeah.
It was Bill Hader. Bill Hader went through and he pulled that movie down. And so I was like, I'll check it out. And then when I found it, I was shopping at Barnes & Noble, and they're having a sale on Criterion Collection movies. And I found it and I picked it up instantly. So I watched it not too long ago, and it's very very strange movie.
Oh, look. I think I saw this. I think I saw. I looked it up, and I think it's streaming on HBO right now. One of my favorite things is the fact that HBO has put the Criterion Collection, or at least a portion
some of it. Yeah, there, I think
on the service
Max is probably one of the best streaming services out there. I think
absolutely
because they just have so many different types of, like, they have Turner Classic Movies, Studio Ghibli, DC. Where on IMDb, on that, on this house movie I was telling you about, it says more like this, and guess what movie popped? Jake.
Suspiria.
Yeah, Suspiria. Suspiria, and then there's one called Possession, which I've never heard of or seen. Well, I've heard of the newer one. I don't know about this one. There's one called Tetsuo the Iron Man. That sounds interesting. Cure. That was a recent movie, wasn't it? Sorry, guys. I'm, like, reading. Oh, Eraserhead. That's a 60s movie, but that was a good movie.
He's going down the Criterion Collection hole.
I mean... Or I'm just going down the more like household. Sorry, household. okay, I'm gonna move on. Sorry.
Can I interject?
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of weird and rebellious times and preaching about treating the environment correctly, Godzilla versus the Smog Monster came out in 1971. And I think I've shared on YouTube at least a few times with you guys. Maybe you guys don't remember, but like the intro to the movie, and it's like this psychedelic acid trip of this woman singing a song in some club in Japan, and it's showing like a montage of clips of like Godzilla and this monster that's produced out of like a bunch of sludge from a different planet, and how it's like basically polluting the earth, and the message of this song and really the movie is like, treat the earth right and don't pollute. So and then meanwhile we have this atomic breathing monster Godzilla, who's the product of man's errors,
exactly,
arguably. So I thought that was kind of an odd Godzilla movie. A lot of the movies during the so-called Showa era were wacky, but this was one of the wackier ones, just as far as the imaging, the montage of sludge in the ocean and this woman singing. It's very weird. So that's kind of like the only Godzilla reference I'll mention for the 70s.
Was that the only 70s Godzilla, though? What else came out around that time?
No, there were several others.
Oh, okay.
Terror of Mechagodzilla was also in the 70s.
Was the one where he flies on his back? Is that in the 70s?
I don't know.
He kicks somebody by flying into them?
It's one of those 60s or 70s for sure.
The 70s also is kind of when VHS and Betamax were becoming a thing. VCR and all that
stuff. Yeah, and for the people that could afford it.
But yeah, I think Betamax was pretty expensive, but then VHS came out in the late 70s, and it was relatively cheaper, so it kind of won out on the whole home video war. In 1976, Paramount became the first to authorize the release of its film library onto Betamax video cassettes. Yeah, I saw a Betamax player for the first time at Game Exchange, and that thing was huge. Like,
they had one at Game Exchange?
Yeah, they had one at Game Exchange just sitting on the floor. I really wanted to buy it. I wonder if it's still there. I don't know.
Like, did someone
find a place for it?
Exchange it?
Yeah, I think they bought it. I mean, they're starting to buy things like that now. Like, they're trying to be Hastings, and I'm like, you saw what happened. Okay. You saw what happened to Hastings.
One of my greatest regrets is I never went in Hastings because I thought it was a freaking furniture store. It looks like a furniture store. It sounds like a furniture store. And then, like, maybe a month before it closed, I started dating my wife, and she's like, let's go to Hastings. And I was like, why? Why?
Yeah.
And it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And sad.
You're like, oh my God.
I could have had this
is what I've
time.
Been missing all of. Well, like,
this is beautiful. I'm never going to see this again.
I lived in Hot Springs growing up, and we didn't have a Hastings, but my friends who grew up in Benton did have a Hastings, and they would always talk about how they'd just come to Hastings all the time because they also had a coffee shop in there, which is kind of the norm for bookstores, because Hastings was a bookstore on, like, most of one side was a bookstore. And so they had a coffee shop and stuff. And I'm like, man, I kind of wish either there was a Hastings in Hot Springs or I grew up in Benton, because I did start going to Hastings more when I started visiting my friends more, and then I eventually moved to Benton, and then Hastings closed. Because that's where I'd buy, like, brand new comics, because they had, you know, a bunch of used comics, but they had brand new ones as well, and that's where I'd buy them. But Game Exchange is starting to be like that now, where they're buying comics, they're buying records, they're buying instruments, they're buying power tools, they're buying apparently Betamax and old technology, and then they're also
Bauer
buying
tools.
Yeah, I think they were buying Bauer tools for a while. I don't know if they still are, but they're buying TVs, you know, they're buying, and then they're buying new stuff, like they're buying novelty items like coffee mugs and little stuffed trinkets and keychains.
Did you
and wallets,
did you see any CRT TVs?
Not at Game Exchange. I did buy the TV I have in this room, actually came from Game Exchange, because it was a 50-inch TV. I need something kind of small, but I needed it to be flat screen, and $150, so wasn't too
bigger
bad.
With what I have, 30 yeah. something still.
Yeah, that's blowing my mind right now. I haven't given Game Exchange a single thought since I was probably 20.
Yeah, it was better before all this happened.
Last time I went in there, it was literally just games
and movies.
Ridiculously high prices.
Games.
So, wow, that's something. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I find, like, I bought a wallet recently, and I found one because it was the last Airbender. So I bought it, but it was like $20. It's very expensive for a wallet, but I went ahead and bought it anyway. So, I mean, like, sometimes I find things, but, like, I haven't been in there in probably a couple months. Also, this was the time that Laserdisc came out as well. And for those of you who know what Laserdisc is, it's like a giant DVD, two-sided giant DVDs that you can also watch unedited versions of Star Wars on these newfangled Laserdiscs. But I think there's some VHS Star Wars that are also unedited. That came out before the 90s or something. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like in the 80s. I don't own them, but I'd love to.
I have a few different versions of Star Wars. I think three, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the ones before the 1995 version, which is like the last time we had the unedited versions on at least VHS. I think the 80s ones were like CBS. It said CBS on the box
those,
or something.
I have those.
Yeah, those are the ones I remember. They're earliest. Speaking of weird, speaking of Criterion Collection, speaking of Max, not what it's called, can we talk about the Fantastic Planet or the Wild Planet?
Planet, and yes, we made. That was one of the movies I suggested to you guys because I loved it. It was very like I don't remember where I saw it at, but I saw it and I instantly knew I needed to watch it. And then I saw it was on Criterion Collection, so I instantly bought it. And go ahead, Zach. You want to talk about
what's a little? Well, I guess I'll provide my little.
Yeah, I want to hear what you thought about it.
Understanding of it. Bunch of blue-faced aliens, bug-eyed, red-eyed creatures called Trags or Trogs, mm-hmm. basically treating little humans or Oms as their pets.
Yeah.
And they realize that these little humans are a threat, they believe, to their existence on this particular planet. And they have to figure out something to try to exterminate these little humans. And it centralizes around one particular human. And it's very much interesting, odd film. There's lots of messaging of like dominance among other people, a misunderstanding other cultures. And I don't know. It really stuck with me. And a lot of it had to do with just the kind of the graphic depictions of, you know, of violence and just mistreatment of another individual.
That's like the 70s animation. We'll talk about that in a second. But
what'd you think about the movie?
It's also a French movie.
By the way, it's French.
Yeah.
Well, I like French film.
Yeah, I do too. But, you know, French films are a little more, I think, a little more edgy. They'll go places that American films won't. And even in animated movies, because, like, you know, that whole time, the aliens are like, their boobs are out most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, to me, I wasn't like freaked out about, but some people, out. Yeah, I mean, I was just like, oh, okay, this is like a thing. This is just how they are, you know, it's like whatever. But I don't know. When I first watched the movie, I thought it was, I mean, I loved it, but that's because it's weird. I don't know. It's just a strange animated movie. I don't know. There's not much to say about it, except it's, I thought it was like a really interesting movie. I wanted to watch it
again. I like the way it begins. The way it begins is very revealing. Like, it just, you just think there's this woman in her...
Yeah.
Infant son just trying to escape some type of threat, but then we see this giant hand, blue hand finger flicking the mother and
flicking
her
around,
down,
yeah.
down the hill like several times, and it's like quite disturbing. And then the creature picks up the woman and leaves the baby on the ground and drops her, and she dies. And then you realize it's these children, these. Like a group of kids that are trogs, and they don't realize the significance of what they're right working with. Like these are humans, and obviously we can relate to them because we are human ourselves.
Yeah,
and these are a bit more, I guess, like Stone Age style humans, I'd say. But then some of them that grow up with the aliens, they're like our main protagonists. He becomes more intellectual, and he gets that technology from the aliens to understand the world around him, and he spreads that knowledge to these other communities of little humans. And then that's when they start to realize that they have a greater purpose perhaps in life than just serving as these little pet creatures or pests as perceived by the aliens. So they kind of start an uprising of sorts, and then the movie kind of ends. I think it ends on a like, we'll have a compromise, we'll try to live, coexist, as I understood it, long as you guys don't destroy, as long as you humans don't destroy our ability to basically have sex. With other species around the universe, because they're too lazy to travel, I guess.
Yeah, kind of made me think also a bit about like Planet of the Apes. You know, I mean, of course, I don't think that this planet they're on is Earth and Fantastic Planet, but
no,
you know, Planet of the Apes, it starts with, you know, it's the Planet of the Apes, right? And you don't realize that it had been taken over. But it's kind of like the whole same concept. Even with this new Planet of the Apes movie, it's the same thing where like humans and their apes are just like who live there, and the humans are kind of like the apes now, and blah 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 blah. It's kind of that same concept where they're like, this is life, and humans, which we are humans, right? You know, so we can't really relate because there aren't giant aliens living here, but we can kind of empathize, right? And sympathize with them and feel sad for them, because it's like, this is their life. This super sucks, right?
Yeah. Talk about the animation. What was so significant about the style of animation?
Well, a lot of 70s animation was rotoscoped. Now, I'm not sure about Fantastic Planet. It doesn't look rotoscoped to me, but that doesn't mean it's not. But it's very, and rotoscope is kind of freaky because it's very like when you animate something by drawing it, you can kind of control how your character moves and what they look like when they move. But man, when you rotoscope something, it can look so realistic. It kind of freaks, not really freaks you out, but you know, it's a strange sight to see rotoscope stuff. Yeah.
It comes out of nowhere, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, I don't know that animation, I don't know. And just the 70s animation, even hand-drawn stuff, it's just different. I don't know how to explain it. It looks older. Everything is, I don't like, I watched The Hobbit, you know, which is a 70s animated movie, and it's just very, the way the characters are drawn, the way the characters look, like they don't look like humans. Of course, hobbits really aren't humans, right? They're human, but they're hobbits. So I don't know.
Short.
I just really enjoy that 70s animation. It's not as polished, I guess, is the idea. Or what I'm trying to say is like, it doesn't seem as polished as even hand-drawn stuff now, which, you know, we don't really see hand-drawn stuff anymore. But, you know, The Boy and the Heron came out last year, and it looked great. Very, very great looking animation. Nothing like 70s. And I guess that's what I like about the 70s.
Yeah, I wonder if the X-Men show from the 90s was hand drawn, because I know they rebooted X-Men 90s, is that what they're calling it? That's the new
X-Men
show.
X-Men 97.
Yeah, 97. I want I doubt 97 is hand-drawn if the old, like the original 90s was. I don't know.
I think it was hand-drawn. It was probably,
original?
A little bit. Yeah, probably a little bit of hand-drawn and computers. Because, even South Park, its first episode was made with construction paper. And then after that, it was all computers. Yeah. So even they had the technology then to make it on computer. So I'm sure that is probably mostly on computer.
My first exposure to what the word rotoscoping means is like Lord of the Rings, the movie. The animated movie.
Yeah.
Remember that one? Is it like 1970 something that came out? And I thought it was very odd just to see, like, we're so used to this like 2D animation thing going on. You see this,
what
seems like to be a real person around. It's like, very scary. I was like kind of freaked out as a kid. The movie's already kind of a strange situation, like with Gandalf. He kind of acted very strange throughout the movie, making little noises at Sam. But I thought the orcs especially and the Balrog, he was rotoscope. It was very gave me an uncomfortable feeling as a kid. Okay, it just looks weird.
I'm looking at rotoscope movies now, and
cheaper? Is it cheaper to rotoscope?
I'm sure it's probably easier. It's probably easier to do.
Probably easier.
Maybe that's the proper word. Just get to get people move around and we'll just animate over them.
Yep, exactly. I'm trying to say according to this list, there's not a lot of rotoscope movies from the 70s, but I bet you this list might be long.
Even Aragorn was rotoscoped during certain scenes. And Boromir, when he got like 20 arrows in him.
This list doesn't have very many.
You should type in first rotoscope movie of all time.
Okay. Well, while you guys were doing that, I was looking up some more of the Fantastic Planet, and it looks the Fantastic Planet used a cutout stop motion style. So could they
that makes sense.
Cut images out, and that kind of made sense because it looked like you'd have an image that would be kind of still, and then suddenly would flash to a new perspective or a new person's like face would change, but it was like it wasn't ever fluid. It was like very almost like I hate to compare it to this, but for our listeners, it was very South Park-esque.
Well, that's what
kind of like these cutouts who just kind of like waddled across the screen, or like had these kind of very janky motions as they ran. Think of like a very tastefully done South Park animation style.
Yeah.
Well, that's what South Park, South Park is cut
out. South Park is cut out. Yeah.
Yeah, cut out stop motion.
So, but just to give an idea of the type of animation and flow that the film had, not as comedic timing at all, but just a very like one kind of set of frame and then it would just change to another. And they did a really good job with the timing on it to give emotion and depth. They really, really had to be like, you guys would think they'd really have to plan that out to get the emotion and the feeling across to the viewer when they don't actually have fluid movements. Like I remember watching it because I watched it a couple nights ago for this, and I was very interested to me how they would like linger on certain people or frames or scenes before cutting out to the next. They had to be very judicious with their timing.
So it looks like there is a rotoscope video from 1920 called the Clown. Basically, just a clown moving around. Coco the Clown looks like not very long, only about a few minutes long. That was rotoscoped. I do remember seeing this, some sort of musician, I forget his name, but there's also like an elephant rotoscoped animated short video where this guy, it's him dancing, but they've, of course, drawn over it and made it look like the elephant's dancing. And it's very realistic looking. I think that's why, like you said, with Gandalf and stuff, it's so like freaky because it's so just so real.
Was the 1940s Superman series by Fleischer, was that rotoscope as well?
That's the guy who did this clown thing.
I would guess so. Right. That's some of the best animation in terms of movement I've ever seen.
But it's only animated when he's flying, right? Or is the whole thing animated?
I don't know. The certain movements he does, it feels like it looks like that. Like the moments before he flies as well.
Yeah.
That are rotoscoped.
Okay, so I guess if I'm...
That's
if
like
I'm,
one of the best. I have it on VHS. No. What was the name of the Superman? Max Fleischer.
I also watched Watership Down, which I know, Jake, you've talked about it before. Great movie. Great movie, by the way. Very, like, I was reading some trivia on it, and it talked about how, like, if this movie was... like more adults went and saw this movie than children, because it was scary for children. And like, I was like, yeah, I could see that. Like, there's a scene where I think it was Bigwig, which is kind of like the leader of this group. The movie's about this group of rabbits who it's very interesting. They have this, like, the sun is like their god, and they have this whole like philosophy and almost like a religion within their community, if you will. But they decide they don't want to live in the Warren. Warren is another name for their home that they're in. So they are going to go find another one. And so during the whole thing, there's a scene where one of the rabbits, and I'm pretty sure it was Bigwig, gets trapped under a wire by his neck. And he's like choking and he's dying.
Does he get decapitated?
No, he doesn't get decapitated. That would have been crazy. But he did start bleeding out of his mouth. And like just seeing that, I was like, yeah, I could see this being kind of freaky for children. Like,
this was PG? The heck?
Well, it was a passing. It was given a passing.
That's British.
It was given it's given a passing grade for years, and then I think very recently it just became PG, which originally it was, I think it was like a U grade, which U I guess is maybe an overseas thing, maybe means for all ages, kind of like G, and then it was just I think it said 44 years later it was given a PG rating, and then they made I think Netflix made a limited series. Like TV show, but anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed the 70s version. Yeah, I enjoyed the 70s one. It was very.
I just like the fact that not made for children, more adults saw it. But can you just imagine like a mom taking her children to it in the 70s? Like, oh, we're gonna go see this animated movie about bunnies, and then you have freaking bunny bleeding out.
Yeah,
bleeding out of the mouth, like death rows. Terrifying for children.
You know, kind of off topic, but not. I went and saw Small Soldiers when it came out in theaters, and I don't know if you've seen that movie, but I think
it's also kind of not for children.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
It's more for children, but.
But I wanted to see it, and my mom took us, and I remember liking it, but, you know, now as an adult, I'm like, this is not a movie that, you know, a kid at my age at the time, because I think it came out at 95, so I was probably 9 or 10 years old, should have seen. But I mean, I still liked it because it was talking toys.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh.
The agenda in this movie is strong.
Yeah.
So the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh came out in 77 as well. Remember, I don't know if you guys ever watched any of those.
I watched it a little bit, not really.
That was for kids, but it had this adult feel to it, too. Like, adults could enjoy that program.
Yeah.
Remember growing up watching the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, it looks like
that's something that a lot of animation and quote unquote kids shows had back then, is they really were made for the entire family. It was something that kids could enjoy, but they had stuff for the parents, even all the way up to the 90s. Like, I go back and I watch movies with my daughter, like The Lion King and like The Aristocrats and all this stuff. I'm like, oh, there is a ton of stuff in here that just flew over my head.
Of course.
As a little squirt.
Yeah.
And you don't have that in movies today. Modern movies today, if it's a kid movie, it is a kid's movie.
Oh, brainless and wacky.
Adults, you prepare to turn off for 2.5 hours because it's going to be dumb as heck.
Depending on what kind of kids movie you're talking about. Like, if you're talking about like Bluey and I don't know.
I'm talking about most of Disney Peppa Pig. Animation.
Okay.
Those are shows.
Like, there are some cool ones. There are cool ones like DreamWorks. DreamWorks makes some good films that are good for enjoyable for the whole family.
Yeah.
I think even Illumination has come out with a few films that have been like, oh, okay, that's I can see that. But like Disney in particular.
Yeah, it's all about.
Don't even consider it.
Well, like, I remember,
it's a kid movie through and through.
I remember when Shrek
came out. I will say the exception of that is the Encanto movie.
Okay.
Has like really heavy themes of like family trauma and like adults like building relate, like working through family trauma, like as an adult and things like that. So every once in a while, but for the most part, if it's like a children's show today, it's going to be for the kids.
I don't know, man.
And that wasn't so in '70s. In the '70s, like, you can enjoy it.
I don't know. Inside Out was pretty good. I loved that movie. You know, I just saw Migration, and that movie was actually, I was pleasantly surprised about how
Migration.
It wasn't like a masterpiece by any means, but I was like, oh, there were like several parts that I thought was actually funny. And like, I took my nephew and him and I would laugh at the same times. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe I'm laughing at this movie. But it was a DreamWorks movie, though. And I think DreamWorks does a little bit better job targeting both children and adults, like you said, yeah, as opposed to Disney, who's, you know, targeting children, and maybe adults will enjoy it. Like, there's a few Disney Pixar movies that I really love, like Toy Story and Inside Out, but you know, for the most part, I don't care for them. Like Frozen, do not care. Moana, a little better than Frozen. Tangled, a little better than Frozen, but like, I could go without seeing them ever again. Okay, sorry, we went
tangent,
on
a, baby.
We are a huge tangent. Yeah. Oh wait, we need to talk about Chinatown.
Chinatown.
Yeah, that movie. That was.
Go ahead, Chinatown, Zach. For our listeners, Chinatown is a neo-noir focusing on Jake Gilligan, a undercover private detective
Giddies
who is searching. Yeah. Jake Gitz. But he's searching for his target, Evelyn Mulray, trying to uncover this plot that kind of boils around him. Jack Nicholson plays the undercover the private investigator. I think he does a fantastic job. Like, I think it's one of the first movies that I saw of his where he didn't play like a crazy guy. You know, he plays like he's a smart, like critically thinking individual who attempts, I think, to be a decent guy through the film. He definitely has a moral standing for it. But anyhow, I'm so excited to hear about this because neither of you had heard about this or watched it before we were going to talk about it. Yeah.
I want to say I'd heard of it, but I didn't know anything about it. Maybe it's just heard of it by name because it sounded vaguely familiar when you mentioned it, but I never had seen it. Didn't know anything about it. Anything like that. Like the name even, I mean, they say Chinatown like three times, but you don't go to Chinatown. It's just where he worked before.
No.
Like that's what I thought was interesting. One of the most interesting things about it was like the movie's called Chinatown. You think you're probably going to be in Chinatown or maybe they call him Chinatown or something like that. And it's like, no, that's just where he used to work. But we're never going to see it. That was like one of the funnier things about it. I mean, I loved it because it was like a detective story that wasn't like, you killed my brother, I'm going to find, or you killed my wife. It was, there's people that are, you know, releasing water at night during a drought. We got to figure out who's doing it. And somebody found out. And now, I mean, yes, it is about a murder, right? But it's not like a murder where it's like this person.
It's not like a revenge.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I'm going to get back at this person. He's like genuinely trying to investigate something else that's going on.
Yeah, it's like, but also a murder has kind of sparked the conversation. But like, just the things he finds out about, you know, there's a drought going on, and he mentions having they're irrigating these orange groves out in, you know, in California and whatever, and it's like not true, and it's just like very not stuff you typically liken to a detective film about droughts and releasing water and stuff like that.
Drought, water, corruption all goes hand in hand.
Yeah, but drought
projects,
and water.
Secret projects.
But drought and water. I mean, like, that's, I don't know.
You're sucking the life out of everything. I feel like there was so much messaging throughout this film. And I think Jack Nicholson did a great job at not playing the usual, as you said, Jake, the crazy guy, or the constantly funny dude. But yeah, he was a brilliant actor in this film. I think for me, it was a guy that was just became invested and somewhat trapped in trying to solve this mystery. And in a way, it kind of ends, I guess, without true resolution or answers in a way, at least from my perspective, unless perhaps I was missing something. I thought all the actors were wonderful, including the guy, the father.
What
his name?
Her father.
He kept mispronouncing Jack Nicholson's character last name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I liked all the actors I thought did a great job too. Even like the actual detectives in the film, I thought they did a good job. Yeah.
And one of my favorite scenes, just from a visual perspective, was when Nicholson almost gets washed away and he's trying to get onto the fence and hop over. I mean, I was like worried for him, like he's gonna hit his privates or something on the spiky part or something. Like there was no CGI, obviously. This is all practical. This is Jack Nicholson. It was no stunt double. It was him doing everything. I mean, that was a lengthy sequence, and for him to get on the other side and then get his nose slashed with scissors or whatever it was, and he's wearing ridiculous with the bandage on his nose for a chunk of the movie, and I don't know.
Special effects symbolism really good. In that. Even at the end when she gets shot in the head and it goes through her eye, I thought they did a good job at portraying that, making it look really realistic. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of gross even. And you're thinking of Noah Cross was his name, the older guy.
Yes.
Her father, Noah Cross. I all around, like, dude, I did really like that movie a lot. I would watch it again. I think I think this would be a movie I could show my students in like a film history class, because I was thinking about that, because my boss keeps asking me to give her ideas for the classes for the actual film major and stuff, and I'm like, well, they need film history, and I'm like, this could be a movie that I could show them for the, you know, the 70s would be this. Totally.
Won a lot of awards too, right?
Hang on. I'm on their page on IMDb. Let's see.
Did you guys catch, since you obviously hashtag spoilers, since you guys know the resolution of the film, thinking back, did you guys catch the foreshadowing throughout the film?
I don't know. You're going to have to explain it to
throughout.
Me.
So I really loved this film because I feel like it is a true neo-noir. Like, it is a black film with the modern sensibilities of 1970s at the time, which solidly is perfectly neo-noir.
I forget that black film.
I love the fact that it doesn't have a satisfying resolution. You know, that's trademark
totally
noir. Just the characters and the stylings, a lot of the decisions they made could have easily been made to make it more of an action-packed thriller shoot 'em up type movie, and they deliberately chose to take alternate routes that really went to like almost undermine Jake's ability, like him getting his nose cut and he has to wear that ridiculous bandage halfway through the film.
Yeah.
And just like a lot of things that you just want to see in Hollywood today, because the protagonist has to be like the alpha male main guy. And in this one, he's like, he's a really great detective, but he also can get effed up.
He gets the crap beat out of him constantly.
Yeah, he's not like the perfect action hero.
Right.
It's a normal guy.
And just the twist that went through is fantastic. And I also really love that if you go back and you watch it a second time, you can actually see a lot of foreshadowing that only makes sense once you've seen the film. For instance, when Jake puts his glasses on the tire and they run to determine who was there, and they run over the lens and one of the lens cracks. When he's eating on the orchard with Noah, and he has fish, and he like slaps the fish down. The fish, he's like looking at it and has like the blown out eye. All these little things go throughout the film and actually point to the conclusion of Evelyn getting shot at the end. And you don't see any of that catch any of that until you see the conclusion for the first time. You're like, oh, wow. So that's a lot of artistry that I don't see in movies today either.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty cool. I guess I need to watch it again because, like, I understand what you're saying, but even like hearing about it to me sounds cool, but it's like, why did we need that foreshadowing at the end?
I think it has to do with, well, one, as far as moving the story, I think it's a subtle hint to the finality and inevitability of what's going to happen. The whole point of noirs in general is you have a protagonist who is unable to achieve whatever it is they're trying to do. And so I feel like this is the filmmaker's way of just giving hints that, like, yes, he's striving, yes, he's working, but ultimately it's not going to matter because this is going to happen. So it's just kind of a nice... It's just a nice subliminal messaging throughout the way.
That's cool. Yeah, I guess you're right. That is pretty. Also, that cop was a pretty dang good shot to hit her from as far back as he did, and it goes through her eye at night. I mean, the only advantage he had was that it was a convertible, right? Like, there was nothing to block her from behind. It's like, I don't know. It's kind of funny.
The daughter was overacting, though. Seems like a lot of
that was also an interesting
did back in the day for screaming.
Oh, yeah. That was like, and I don't think the movie took place in the 70s. I'm pretty sure it took place
like the 30s.
Yeah.
It was just that style of acting back in the
70s. Yeah, that was how.
Or even Kim Basinger, who played Vicki Vale in Batman, she overacted, I felt like, with this her screaming and damsel in distress. It got annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought that was an interesting dynamic, too, with the whole father-daughter, I'm going to say the R-word, rape. And, like, I wasn't expecting that.
Me neither.
Because that's, I mean, yeah, like, it happens, right? But, like, it's not something that you'd necessarily put in movies, even really back in the 70s, and especially before that. So I thought that was kind of an interesting twist, a crazy twist for her to be her. She's like, she's my sister. She's my daughter. She's my sister. She's my daughter. And then she's like,
he didn't get it at first.
Yeah, he didn't. He kept hitting her. Yeah. And I actually read that she was like, she wanted him to really slap her. And so he did. Thought that was interesting. Dang.
I wonder how many takes they did of slapping scenes.
I think it was only one. I think it was one take, and that's the take they used.
Good.
Yeah.
So, well, they took several without him actually slapping.
I mean, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's only one take of him actually slapping her, and that's the take they used.
Yeah, because, that's the one they put in the movie.
Yeah, that's because she was like, just really, really slapped me. And it looks like he slapped her. So she's a good actress, man. She could take that. Yeah, that was a cool movie. I really, really enjoyed it.
I like the music, of course, the trumpets, the sultry sounds.
Oh, yeah,
of,
sure. Yeah, yeah, that was pretty cool. And it seemed like it was kind of few and far between as far as the music goes. But when it came, like, it was really good. I don't really, I mean, unless I just didn't notice it, it's just one of those movies where music didn't play a huge part. But when it did.
Just like Zone of Interest, where when you hear music, it's something meaning and you remember.
Oh, yeah. So,
go see it, people.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, all the movies that we talk about, you should probably see. But Chinatown is probably one of those that you should definitely see.
More than once, for sure.
So, apparently. The last movie that I want to talk about is movie came out in 1976. It's called All the President's Men. Have you guys seen it? I know Zach has.
Yeah, I have a Blu-ray DVD of the book.
Yeah, I don't have any of it as far as home release goes. But I saw it for the first time. I think it was one of those movies I had to watch in college, and I really liked it because it's kind of the same as Chinatown. It kind of made me think about it, where it's like a detective movie, but it's not detectives, right? They're journalists. But journalists, if you think about it, especially investigative journalists, they're kind of like detectives. But the whole thing is about
based on a true story too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was one of the movies for our class. I could choose between that movie and Chinatown, and I chose Chinatown.
Oh yeah, no, I think we just had to watch it, and so I watched it, maybe we were forced to watch it in class, and I think that's when I first saw it. And
no bathroom breaks.
I mean, you could go to the bathroom if you wanted to, but he wouldn't get a pause it for you. But anyway, so. It kind of made me think of Chinatown, where it was like this detective film without detectives, of course, and you got Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, who are two investigative journalists who break the Watergate scandal, and that's kind of where the term Deep Throat comes from, because that's the name of their source or whatever, because we were talking about Deep Throat earlier. But I thought it was like, I really liked that movie, and I almost showed it to my high schoolers, but I was like, man, they are not going to appreciate this the way I appreciate it. And so like, I liked it because there wasn't a lot of action. There was a lot of cool lighting choices. I think that people who decide against using light, it's a very interesting, to me, very interesting decision, because it's like,
you could
see someone walking, right? But you can't see them, and they just, and maybe there's like a street light on or something. It's nothing elaborate. It's almost like just using the natural light that's around, you know? And so there's a lot of interesting light choices in that movie. But I think
it was the beginning scenes, like where there's the breaking into the, what was it? The Democratic national headquarters, and there's, you know, you don't really see anything because it's dark.
Yeah,
they're trying to be concealed.
But of course, that makes sense. But then there's some scenes where there's like, if I remember correctly, the parking garages and stuff, where it's just like there's no light, and I don't know. Just to me, those no light choices are very interesting in any movie. But of course, you can't just do it. You have to have a reason for it, right? But it's just an interesting choice. A lot of interesting lighting choices, and I don't know. It's just it's just a movie about two guys trying to find the truth, right? There's no real action scenes. I mean, there might be a couple. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I have seen it a couple times. But there's no like huge action scenes, kind of like the same with Chinatown. I mean, that's like the most action was probably, you know, the fighting in the Orange Grove and the water thing with the cages. I'm talking about Chinatown now. With the fence.
Yeah.
And then when he gets the crappy, like stuff like that, like, but like with All the President's Men. And one reason I didn't want to show it to my high schoolers is because I also figured they would think it was boring because of that fact, right? Like, we can watch stuff like that and be okay with it, but high schoolers, totally different ball game. But anyway, it's a 70s movie that I really like.
I think the movie does one of the best movies to show process journalism at work.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when it comes to, you know, taking notes, interviewing, doing door knocks, as we all have done here. I still work in the business, but it does an excellent job at showing that process and that kind of the anxiety felt by people, reporters working in the business. Was at one point, Bob Woodward, Robert Redford's character, feels like he's being watched. Perhaps the Secret Service is after him, and you could see the paranoia. And I think there's some interesting, you know, stylistic 70s shots where they might have done like a zoom in or one of those techniques that are known in the 70s for showing intensity and all that. But I just thought the moments of tenseness were well done. It made you feel something. You didn't need action to feel what they were feeling. That this journal says they were unraveling probably the biggest story in the United States at the time, that many people were following story after story. But you know, as you saw with toward the end, to kind of wrap things up with the movie, you see the typewriter and dates and headlines pop up. That was excellent. And it was a kind of a nice thesis, I believe, it as well, because I think the movie started out with that typewriter visualization, and it ends like that. I like when movies could kind of go back to that, how they started and kind of end with this bookending. Yeah. But that's one of the more unique bookendings I've seen in film. But I don't know. I think it would have been a great... If they were to do it today, I'd watch it as a series.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Again, in a movie format, you get to create that unique tone it felt like a long movie. I don't know, maybe close to 2 hours, maybe at least 2 hours.
Let's find out. Yeah, 2 hours and 18 minutes, which for 70s, even anything before the 2000s, 2 hours and 18 minutes, that's long. Like, movies were an hour and a half then. And so, like, I think, you know, in recent years, have movies been able to go past the two hour? Like, I just watched Dune Part 2, and it's 2 hours and 46 minutes long. I didn't even know that. Like, I thought I was going to get out of there at like 8 or 8:30. That's why when I texted you, Jake, I was like, I just got out, dude. I really thought I was going to get out of there in time to get back.
They remake it.
Yeah, but I didn't, totally didn't. And I apologize for that, Jake. But it was a good movie though. I got out at 9:20, and I think just, recent years have been okay to start doing 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. Killers of Flower Moon and Oppenheimer were 3 and above hours. So, for 2 hours and 18 minutes in the 1970s, it's a long movie. But still a great movie. One of the greater movies I've seen in my
But
lifetime.
Dune, part two, or All the President's Men?
All the President's Men. I would put
Yeah.
All the President's Men above Dune. Like, Dune was good, but it was only like the second half of Dune that was like really good. When he drinks the water, which is centipede poison, by the way. Just drinking poison. Anyway, that's a whole, sorry, spoiler alert for those who've seen Dune Part Two yet.
What year did the original Dune movie come out?
80
What was it?
something. 80
80s.
something.
Okay, it
Yeah,
wasn't 70s. Okay, let's
86,
not. We'll reserve that for the 80s
yeah.
by the decade.
Let's see.
Great.
Looks like they released one in 2000 as well.
What
84.
series or a movie? TV
I
movie,
don't know.
perhaps.
War. Probably a TV movie, yeah. So the movie, Dune, the original Dune movie came out in 1984, and it was 2 hours and 17 minutes. I've never seen it, but they just re-released it in theaters not too long ago. I didn't get to go see it though. Let's see. This is 2001. It's a TV miniseries starring William Hurt, Alec Newman. I don't know who that is. Ooh, Giancarlo Giannini. That's not the guy I was thinking. I was thinking of guy from Breaking Bad. A bunch of people I've never heard of, except for William Hurt. So that came out in 2000. Any other movies or anything you guys want to talk about?
1970s. I'm trying to think. I'm
It's a
looking
very
at my
interesting
desk
time.
of movies I
Yeah,
propped up. Cannot
like
say
even
anything.
Chinatown, I felt had a very specific look to it with the 70s. Movies in the 70s had this specific look where it's like
I love
film.
it.
Yeah, it's like film, and it's always like these warm colors, it seems. I don't know. It's just these very, and I'm not talking about animated movies. I'm talking about live action films. Like, they have this really specific look, and it looks great. Like, it's very nostalgic, and I think that's why I liked Dazed and Confused so much. Though it was made in the 90s, it still has that 70s look and feel to it. And even though I wasn't born in the 70s, I get this weird nostalgia feel from it.
How about American Graffiti? I
I've
saw
never
that
seen it.
when you someone recommended I see it, and I saw it, but it was just I wasn't very impressed, to be honest. It was just
Yeah,
like
I've
there
never
was
seen
no
it.
story, there was nothing really that felt like there was no end goal. So that's kind of what put me out of it. I mean, other than like my love for a certain decade, like the 50s or whatever it was, there was nothing that really pulled me in. It was just like I was watching like a reality show, but like a movie format. Of like teens just being teens.
I mean, I guess if that's what it's about, I might like it, because I like those kind of movies about, it's like, that's what Dazed and Confused is, teenagers being teenagers.
But that had more of a resolution, I felt like, or American Graffiti was just
Oh, really?
all over the
Okay.
place and open-ended. You have to see it.
Yeah, I guess so.
And that was George Lucas,
Yeah, that was
right?
George Lucas. That was before Star Wars, I believe. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, 73.
So I guess unless you have something, Jake.
I was 68.
What?
2001: A Space Odyssey. I was
Woo!
68.
Yeah, I was 60. I appreciate we talked about that in the last. I was just quickly, there's this list of, it's Rolling Stone's 100 best movies of the 70s. I'm not going to go through all 100 of them. I was just going to do the top 10. This is Rolling Stone's, if that's okay with you guys. And then we can be done. Do you want to
Yeah,
try to
rapid fire.
guess? Or do you
Yeah,
want to?
number
No, let's do
one.
number 10.
Okay,
Number 10.
number 10.
You're not going to get it. I don't even.
THX1138. Close Encounters
No.
of the Third Kind.
No.
Give us a hint at least before you reveal.
Okay, hang on. I don't know. I've never seen this movie.
Have a letter or two or a word,
It came out
unless
in
it's.
1974. I'll tell you what it's about. It's a Francis Ford Coppola movie. It says, in the downtime between the first two Godfather films, Francis Ford Coppola made a different sort of masterpiece, one that tapped into the paranoid mood of the moment. Gene Hackman stars as Harry Call, a San Francisco-based surveillance expert whose latest assignment, eavesdropping on a couple walking through a busy downtown park, presents an irresistible professional challenge and threatens him to draw into a deadly mystery. That sounds interesting, actually.
Dang, sounds good, whatever it
Does
is.
sound interesting. Yeah, it sounds. It's called The Conversation, 1974.
Okay.
Okay, number
Number
nine.
nine. All that for Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, 1971, with
Oh man,
Gene
well, I can't believe
Wilder.
we didn't talk about that movie.
Razorhead.
No. Razorhead came out in the 60s. It's called... Sure? I'm almost positive. Let's look it up.
Razorhead. I think you might be wrong, sir.
1977. Never mind. I am wrong. That's I am absolutely wrong. Isn't it? Yeah, that's it. I totally forgot this came out in the 70s. I wholeheartedly thought it came out in the 60s. If you haven't seen this movie, you need to watch it, guys. If I remembered that it came out in the freaking 70s, I'd have told you to watch it over the... the break, but it's okay. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. It's very weird. It's a David Lynch movie.
I mean, anything by David Lynch really is weird. See.
Oh yeah, totally. Like Elephant Man is also a David Lynch movie that is a really good, interesting social commentary type.
Is Mark Hamill in that one?
In Elephant Man?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I feel like he plays a deformed individual in some movie. I swear he does.
Yeah,
maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Not Eraserhead. It's called McCabe and Mrs. Miller. I've never heard of this movie either. 1971.
Never heard of it.
Many people would have taken one look at the mining town of the Presbyterian Church. That's the name of the town. And see nothing but a frontier shithole. John McCabe, however, sees opportunity. Along with a recent arrival, a British woman named Constance Miller, he establishes a high-class whorehouse and meets the supply and demand, carnal needs of the workers and locals. Ooh, it's kind of like The Apartment.
Right. Probably more graphic.
Yeah, probably. Number eight, we talked about this movie.
It's one we talked about, All the President's Men.
Jaws.
It's Jaws. It's number eight. Number seven, we didn't talk about this movie, but I've never seen it, but we probably should have. I can give you a hint. This director came out with a movie last year. It was nominated for an Oscar or two or three.
Just tell us the name of the person.
Martin Scorsese.
Taxi Driver?
Taxi Driver, yep.
Robert. I haven't seen that one.
I haven't seen it.
The Joker took a lot of inspiration from Taxi Driver.
Number six, we have talked about this movie in this episode.
All the President's Men.
Did we talk about it a lot?
Yes. We had a whole conversation about it.
Chinatown.
Yeah. number six. Number five, we did talk about this President's movie as well.
The Omen.
Okay. Let me just tell you something, Zach. All the President's Men is not on the top 10.
Blasphemy.
Yeah, I know. No
awards?
It was one of the very first movies that I mentioned.
The Exorcist.
Yes.
No, but it was in that same conversation. It's The Godfather.
Oh, of course. That would be up there for sure.
Number four. Let's see. From the ad spoof opening credits to the omnipresent shilling for replacement party candidate Hal Philip Walker, Robert Altman's mid-career masterpiece is about selling out of America with the intersectional pull of fame, money, sex, and politics on stage in the country's music capital. Well, if you got country's music capital, you should just know the name of the movie, right? Do you guys know what the country's music capital is?
Nashville.
Nashville. Number three. I've heard of this movie. I've never seen it, though. Charles Burnett. He shot this movie as a student at UCLA. Wow. Where he was in a group. Oh, yes, I have definitely heard of this. Where he was in a group of black filmmakers that scholar Clyde Taylor later lionized as the LA Rebellion. This movie's called Killer of Sheep. I've never seen it, but I have heard of this. I've never
heard of it.
All right. Number two is Mel Brooks' movie about a black sheriff that moves to a white town.
Blazing Saddles came in the 70s? Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, 1974. Blazing Saddles. And then number one, I can tell you that it's a sequel of a movie that we've already talked about in this list.
Godfather 2.
Godfather Part 2.
Part 2. Oh, my God.
Oh, dang it. You didn't say Part 2. You lose. Yeah, so that's the top 10 Rolling Stones 70s movie. Yeah.
I just realized The Alien came out in the 70s.
The Alien or Alien? Is it just called Alien? Okay, yeah. It did come out in the 70s. That was another movie I watched in college, my undergrad. That was a cool movie. The game's fun, too. Alien Isolation. I don't know if y'all played it.
Yeah, that's funny. I like the use of the microphone.
I like the use of it being there's just you and an alien on a ship. You have to run from it. It's kind of the same as the movie. So thanks for listening. And if you guys have any episodes or anything you want us to talk about, you can hit us up on any of our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, which is funny that we still have to say formerly known as Twitter. But anyway, and you can also listen to us on any, pretty much any place you get your podcast. So thanks for listening. And until next time.
Have a fantastic day.
All right. Bye. Where's the stop button? Where's the stop button? Crap, 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 crap. Bye.